Disconnecting everything. Okay, so yes, I'm Dr. Extreme. So we are actually a company. Dr. Kristen a lot about these things or sort of things in our little world. That's the product. I'm just going to do the very, very, very brief shameless plug. It's this guy. And ask me about it later, but I can't not show it to you. So
Yes.
But I have to at least do the 5-second demo. So, oh God, not teledildonics, right? I come from, as he said, the physics research community, and cold fusion is sort of maybe a little bit of an analog here. People, you know, they have the big conferences, and there's the nut session where you get to do give your cold fusion talk, which I was not in the cold fusion. It happens, but. But in spite of that, for instance, I would make the analogy with cold fusion, as much of a failure as it's been, fusion research, I think, is not a waste of money. The government does spend money on it. Maybe someday it will work. And teledildonics, in spite of its many, many, many failures, shitty patents, stupid business plans, all this other stuff, it's interesting, and it could be something. So I want to talk about it. And just sort of quick outline, I'm going to kind of set up the problem a little bit, and then say, you know, why do we care about doing things with machines over networks? What could we do to actually make this worth doing? How could we have it not suck? And then I'm going to give some examples, including a product that I have here hidden behind the podium. It's another product that we're working on and we want to bring out soon, and some stuff about the future. So what is sex if you're a super nerd, which we all are? You've got your brain, and you've got the other person's brain, and you have your bodies, and then it's basically just a whole bunch of information channels. And so if you have reproductive sex, there's DNA going back and forth, and there's forces and all those sorts of things. And so so where I come in as a physicist is I don't know anything about most of these information channels, but I understand things about force and energy and momentum and that sort of thing. And so my kind of career shift into this kind of stuff is all about dealing with that information channel. What isn't sex? It's I think easy to get distracted with trying to figure out how to make some sort of robot sex or machine sex or something with all sorts of things that are actually just not interesting by themselves. They're very interesting and connected to people, but it's worth remembering that they're not interesting alone. And so then I maybe made a bunch of crazy pictures here. Again, we have Alice and Bob as in all computer science things. And this is not interesting. The PDP-11s, no matter how great their junk is, doesn't work. Right, but if you use the tape and you have Alice and Bob, they're humans, then you can actually maybe get some sort of feedback loop and it becomes interesting. And so what do we want when we have sex? And so I liked, I was thinking about this also, but on Thursday night, Micah was talking about the whole loop thing, the concept of loops. And loops are super important. You can get, one of the ways I think that people get really lost with sex machines is figuring out how to move data from one place to another, but you have to have a loop. Like there's that, like the other diagram, it has to go from your mind out through the physical world into the other person's mind and then back through the physical world into your mind. You have to have that loop or it's not sex. And then natural physical interaction, I'm going to talk about a little bit more in a minute. So why does it always fail? Why is it such a complete disaster for years, decades of disappointments? I think in the recent past, there's some pretty not fun stuff that involves software. There's a lot of stuff that gets sort of gimmicky things where people do things with iPhones and stuff like that. And it's easy to get bogged down in software that's really fun. Maybe it's even a erotic experience for the coder, but not for anybody else. And you can also get very complicated. The other thing is that it's very possible to build things that are just way, way, way too complicated. So they're again kind of fun for people who are the builders, but you can't scale them. And so why is this interesting? Why is this worth actually talking about? And I think it can just make everybody have better sex. Like I think if you're mediated by some new machine that we haven't invented yet, then things like gender become more open. Obviously, safety, if somebody's thousands of miles away, presumably is less, you can have a much safer system. complex relationship and consent, all this sort of stuff. So what does work? So I think it's very interesting to look at kind of queer sex, and something that really inspired me for this other product that I'm about to show is the whole idea of people saying this thing, this silicone object that some people have, many people have, that is mine. That's my cock right there. Like, that actually is my cock. And there's a lot of people who say that, and I think that that's very interesting. Like, I think if you take that idea and run with it, then there's a lot of very interesting things that you can do. What else works? Simplicity. Again, like, there's a lot of really complicated technologies that no one uses, and strapping a block of silicone to your body is really simple, and a lot of people use it and get a lot of fun out of it. And I think that's worth remembering when you try to design things that are potentially more complicated. Don't get bogged down in. So here's where I'm going to start getting a little bit crazy. So what I'm going to claim, axioms, things that I'm stating without proof. So I'm going to say these things, and I'm going to try to convince you that they're true, and I have no proof of that. So the three axioms that I'm going to claim are: one, if you wouldn't do something in the same room with someone, you're not going to do it over the network. So if you build a machine and it's really fun and you're doing it with somebody in the room, you replace that physical contact of some wire that's whatever, 20 inches long, with the network, that might actually be interesting. But if it's not fun in the same room, it's not going to be fun 2,000 miles away either. And then the other two are that metaphor matters, that I'll get into what that means in a minute, and that physical apparatus matters. And so I'm just going to get into examples with those. So axiom one, like I said, you know, same room equivalence, the failures are all these different kinds of things where I think that, again, the whole notion of something being erotic for the coder and no one else. There's a lot of interesting things where vibrators get controlled, but are you really doing something that you would want to do in the same room? Whereas conversely, what people often do with a vibrator is really, really simple, and it's great. When I talk about the power of metaphor, one example I would give that's not from sex toys is of what I'm thinking of, and I'll demonstrate with my product, is the way that in the iPhone, I think all the other smartphones do this now too, and a lot of other products, when you move the icons, you take your hand and you move the icons, and there's this physical metaphor built in. They move and they kind of bounce, and there's like this drag. It all feels very natural, but somebody spent a lot of time writing down the differential equations, taking the drag force and getting it dialed in just right. And that's part of why I think the iPhone, everybody has one, and the smartphones from 15 years ago, only certain kinds of people had them, is these kinds of things are very powerful in usability. And then the power of mechanics, this is partly the kind of thing that my personal professional bias comes in, is that I claim that you can't, no matter, so there's this whole thing, at the bottom I say, this ain't DARPA, right? There's an approach that you can take where you say, we're going to buy all the haptic sensors, force and touch sensors, and we're going to have all these different kinds of actuators, and with an unlimited budget, well, we're going to build this sex robot or something like that. And so, you know, DARPA projects, you're often going to have $1 million and then some sort of clever thing that you're supposed to do, and DARPA makes crazy, amazing things with robots. And it's, again, like, outside of the budget of even sort of what they're doing at the armory or something like that, that's not what we're about. But to talk about how I think you should do things is real physical things that you have some kind of like springs and gears and motors and things like that are real, that are not, it's not just some piece of code controlling a huge array of sensors. It's something very tangible. So one example that I love, Kristen's machine here, there's a few things that I really like about this. I mean, For one thing, it's sort of the metaphor thing. It's this, what you have is you have this input and you have this output, and there's a lot of things you can choose to do with it, but it's incredibly intuitive. Like, when you show this to people, they get it, right? I see. It's a very kind of, the metaphor of something that goes whoop, it's easy to understand. Your mind immediately gets it. And so Micah's thing, I don't know if you all saw this on Thursday night, but I also think this goes to kind of more the physicality of it. Part of the thing I really love about this is that there's a sensor, it's an acoustic kind of a sonar sensor. So sound bounces out of one of those things and goes in the other, I think, or something like that. But the thing that I think is really cool about it is that it doesn't just say there's an object in front of me or not, or how far away the hand is or something like that, it has this kind of cone in space above it, where if you hold the sensor and you move your hand across, it doesn't just go on, off, it kind of goes woo, and then the same, you know, as you move it around. And so this, that cone, where does that come from? It comes from the actual acoustic field. That's real field physics of how the vibrations travel out from that actuator. So here's my thing, the Soctis. Which I should have turned on about 10 seconds ago because it had a very short boot up time. But this is where I'm going to have to use the microphone in a creative way. We only need one dope on this button. So yeah, it's a strap on.
I'll hold the microphone.
It's a, okay.
I'm in a mind slave.
Okay. So it's a strap on and then this is the usual array of Arduino-related things. And then there's a vibrator that hangs from here. And so if I...
Profile. You have to show
okay,
the profile.
Okay, yes. But we have to have contact. No, the vibrator has to touch the mic, I think.
It
has to vibrate. You want the vibrator on the mic.
Yes.
It's suction feedback.
Yeah.
So what's happened? All right. Now I'll talk like a sort of normal speaker for a minute here. So what's happening is there's silicone, there's a force sensing resistor, and then when I suck, there's a hole going through the dildo, which it's just a small amount of gas or whatever the pressure is. So when I decrease the pressure by sucking, then there's some springiness, which is natural springiness from the silicone. Again, simple physical stuff. And that's pushing against the force sensing resistor. And so when I suck, I'm decreasing the pressure, which relieves that springiness. And then that decreases the force in the force sensing resistor, which increases the resistance, and there's a voltage divider, and you get your voltage out. And so that's the input, okay? But then the output goes to the vibrator, and it's not input equals some constant times output. There's a little differential equation. And this was very much really inspired by, like I said, by the iPhone, is this idea that you have this incredibly simple equation of motion. You say there's a drag coefficient. So when the suction, the input that comes from the suction, that pressure measurement, that gets converted into a fictitious force, and then I have some object of mass m and it has a drag. And so all that blah, 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 I turn that into two variables, one of which is the constant that turns suction into force, and the other one is lifetime. So the drag coefficient is in some funny units, that would be kilograms per second, whatever, but I want to turn it into seconds. So I rearrange all this stuff to get in the right units, so that's in seconds, and then there's two knobs on this box. And the second knob, this one on the right, is if I turn this down, and then, okay, that's lifetime all the way down. I turn lifetime all the way up. Well, I'm going to turn it all the way up. Okay. It dies down really slowly. And then you go somewhere in between. It's damping, yeah. I mean, it's just it's just a very simple application of the equation. And you can see why I did that, right? Is that you go into the intermediate point, and the point is when somebody's actually sucking on pretty much anything, they don't go suck, pressure equals P, right? They go suck, a suck, a suck, a suck. There's some fluctuation. And sometimes they go, and there's like a moment of not sucking. And so what you don't want to have happen is the output be whatever little bumps are, you don't want those bumps to have it go to zero, because it's not fun when it goes to zero. It's fun that it fluctuates. You don't want it to turn on and sit there. That's not dynamic. But if it goes to zero, that's just, it's not interesting. And so the goal is to try to have the variables be intuitive as possible. I could pick anything in these equations, right? But I want them to be something that's super intuitive so that somebody who doesn't read the directions, because who reads the directions, you buy this thing, you put it on your hip, you've got two knobs, and you start sort of futzing around with it, and you get to where you want to get. And there's also a reset button. So if we go back, if this thing somehow changes a little bit because if you're at some funny angle and then the silicone, the baseline is different, when you hit the button, then it the software just resets zero so that you don't end up just having it on all the time. And so what it can lead to, all kinds of crazy freaking stuff. So, I mean, I think, so the plan actually, I'm trying to turn this as crude as it looks. I have all the little bits and pieces in place in my notebook to turn this into something where I'm hoping within actually the next 3 months that we're going to start selling these kind of onesie twosies, and you'll be able to buy this and you'll be able to put it exactly in the right spot so the vibrator hangs in just the right spot and go nuts, and it's going to be awesome. But there's things that are much more insane that we can't ever possibly sell. But this is where Kristen comes in. This is where, like, passionate produce is how we're going to actually make shit like the flamethrower, where you have a giant flamethrower stack and somebody goes up and they suck on it and whoosh, right? Or what was the other one we were talking about? There's you can have competitions, you can have different people and who can suck the hardest for the longest and all these kinds of things. One thing I think is really interesting is like a packer, like for those of you who don't know what that is, like a dildo that's kind of not erect, that trans men wear sometimes. And if you had one that was that had a dynamic, you suck on it, and then that goes into the Arduino and does this little thing. Well, it's not all, it won't always be an Arduino, but into the microcontroller, and then it pumps, you know, and you have an actual natural sucking erection. And then, you know, one to many, many to one. I like the idea of doing performance art things where maybe you have somebody up on stage and there's some sort of machine, and then people in the audience have dildos, and everybody, like, you actually integrate over the audience and everyone's sucking to make stuff happen on stage, or somebody's on stage, like, sucking like crazy and people have, or maybe one-to-one. And then tele-everything. And so that, just to make a comment on that, tele-wha? Right, so I have these axioms, and then I go blah blah blah, and I show you my toy, and I talk about other people's toys. But actually, everything I've done so far isn't tele anything. But the claim is, to go back to sort of that first claim that I made, that if and only if you like to do something in the same room, then it might work where you do it remotely. Just take the wire, this phone wire in this case, that's about, you know, a foot and a half long, and you replace it with the network, and boom. It should be interesting, I think. And so for the future, you know, a lot of stuff that I've been thinking about that I really want to build, like telehugs, like a, so, you know, you can hug somebody remotely. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that I feel like I've never heard someone propose a telehug, but it'd be great. And it's not that complicated. It's sort of a different direction. And then ultimately, I think that, you know, if you look at how into online, you know, MMORPG, Second Life, all these kinds of things, there's all kinds of stuff that goes on there, all sorts of shenanigans, right? But like, I feel like if you frame it correctly, so people try to make the super telesex robot and it doesn't work, and then people are already doing all kinds of crazy sex stuff in these virtual worlds. But I think if you frame the problem correctly and you build the right hardware, that you can actually get it into the virtual worlds and have it really, really happen. So that's my actual talk. So I already showed you the product. The only other kind of obligatory, hey, I have a company, therefore I have to blather on about it. We have these t-shirts.
Hold it for you. The clitardis.
And so I don't have a big, like, swag bag of them or something. We're selling them online. This is the only one I have with me. But bigger on the inside, yes. So it's Doctor Who and sex ed together at last. Although Kristen also has Doctor Who and sex ed. But yeah, it's like it's dimensionally transcendental in Doctor Who jargon, I think. So, yeah. Oh, we don't have enough dildos, I think, is what's going on. Right? More dildos. Always more dildos.
That's Chinese.
Right. Yeah. No, we have the medical grade silicone. Our stuff is medical grade silicone. So. That's my talk. Thank you.
Okay. So, grab that mic.
The other mic.
Questions. Okay. And I take this one.
Test.
Okay. Questions. Ah, come on. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'm just looking at the fact that silicone, is there any way you could adapt that to be work with other dildos and stuff so that you could, like, put them in and still have it work?
Yes. I think there's always going to be some modification. The minimum modification is you need a hole down the middle. So that's actually what I've done here, in the sense that I had this idea, I started working on it, and I said, I need a dildo right now, like right now, in the lab, need dildo, right? So I just took this and cut it off with a razor blade. So I mean, that's what I did here. And so what you're going to end up doing, if you say, oh, I really, really, really want to, you're going to void the warranty on your dildo, which doesn't have a warranty, but you'll take your dildo, and the issue, one issue is that the more curved it is, the more annoying it's going to be. But if it's really curved, you could probably put it in a vise, and you'll drill in from one end, and you drill in from the other end, and as long as you can get that pressure contact. The pressure has to go all the way through, but I haven't really done it a lot, but I'm pretty sure that if you put a condom over this, that'll be fine, because that membrane will just move up and down. But you have to have a continuous thing. And then the base, well, what we have here is, if I go back to the diagram of what's in there, it's just kind of, again, the springiness of the silicone, just like on the bottom, it's the springiness of the silicone that holds it in. So you kind of eyeball your dildo and say, well, is this going to fit? And if you can figure out the right spot to cut it, you might have to cut it. If not, then, you know, for people who haven't done cast your own dildo stuff, it's super fun. There's a company called Smooth On that sells everything you could possibly want in every hardness and every color. And they have, I mean, you should, if you're on Facebook, you should follow them on Facebook, because they always have stuff on there about how to look like a zombie or have a giant head wound or something, which is a lot of, it's mostly theater people they sell to, which is why it's all body safe.
A friend of mine collects celebrity penises, yes, dildos. Yes. So he has the Jimi Hendrix one, which is kind of creepy. And I think he has like 46 now. So yeah, and he's actually making his own cast and stuff like that. So if he sometimes he meets celebrities and he actually asks them. So yeah. I would like to make a.
It's harder than it looks.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
you can do it. There's tricks. Look it up online.
What's your favorite tool in your workshop for prototyping sex toys?
Notebook and paper, maybe. Notebook and pen. I don't know. For prototyping, my favorite tool. No, I mean, I think it's really pen and paper. I mean, this is sort of how I always work. It's pen and paper, and then the computer, and then pen and paper, and then. To be totally honest, I actually kind of a little bit hate building things. Like, I like to have things, I like to have ideas, and then I like to have those work, and then I suffer through the, actually Kristen had to witness yesterday what it's like when I'm trying to build things, and I just like swear constantly and break things. It's horrible. The best part is, you know, you screw around and it's incredibly disappointing, which building things always is. And then there's a lot more thinking in notebooks and computer use, and then back to trying to make some awful blob of silicone and breaking your saw blades and stuff.
Okay. Oh, yes, please. I noticed on your future slide, you named something FuckNet.
Oh. Is that something that already exists? Did I violate somebody's?
The idea of adding articulated sex to an MMORPG is really fascinating. Have you done any prototyping yet?
Articulated sex to a what?
To an MMORPG, virtual environment.
No, I haven't done anything. I feel like that's the big, that's where this turns into something that's way larger than the kind of company that I want to run. because I feel like I'm not a software guy. I don't deal with software. You know, we sell things online, and so I work with people who work with things online. But like, I don't do software, and so my feeling is that we need to get, like, with this guy, we'll figure out how to do this over the network, and then maybe we'll talk to somebody who's been in Second Life forever and really understands it, or I don't know. Can you do sex in World of Warcraft?
So there are some guys in Italy who are working on something called Plane Shift, which is a fully open source client and open source server MMORPG.
Okay.
And so plane shift.
P-L-A-S-H-I-F-T. Like a geometric
plane. Yeah, yeah. Plane shift. And cool. I think they're new developers live in Italy.
Okay, thanks. Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, I'm all the way on the hardware side. But once we get it really working and then we get it over the network, yeah, we'll see what people want to do. I mean, whether they want to, yeah. And cam girls, there's the whole like, do people want to pay to sit in front of their keyboard and do this thing and then have the see the vibrator happen somewhere?
There's a lot of debate, by the way, about the online gaming aspect of sexuality and stuff. Because, yeah, last year's Ars Electronica was specifically dedicated to talk about games and sex and tech and games. So there's also a couple of really interesting essays about that in the book. Yes, a dying medium, but you can still get it in dying paper cash. at Günther's desk over there. Okay, one question for you, because for those guys who have not heard his talk last year, could you give a brief wrap-up of your the quantum? What happened to the quantum physicist?
Oh, the quantum stuff?
Yeah.
Why am I not?
So why are you not working with DARPA anymore?
Well, I mean, a variety of reasons. I want to do things that have more impact on society. I don't think that the world needs a quantum computer. And I think it's going to take forever to work. And it's not, I don't know. It's, there are personal reasons that I wanted to run my own shop and bring some sort of technology to market since before I started grad school. I mean, that was the goal. I wanted to go get a PhD in physics and go do some sort of a practical thing working for somebody else. And then as soon as I saw the opportunity, spin off, because I imagined that maybe what I was doing in research, you know, I'd go do some quantum. I actually, when I quit my job to do this, I quit my job in May of 2012 to do both this, and then I also was working with a partner who I used to go to school with. We had a quantum computer startup plan, and we were working on that. We were going to build modules and amplifiers and things that would go into quantum computing systems. And he's out in the Bay Area looking for money for his startup now. He's still doing it. And I just talked to him 2 days ago. I'm really glad I'm doing this. So it's just more fun.
Okay. So if there are no more questions, then give the guy a hand, I would say.